Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boy Flip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Lafayette Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holy Field Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer, the Houston Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com.
Dunkle.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, bus people. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah, nice weather here we're having it. I really feel sorry for all of you up in the Northeast. Oh, my gosh. Horrible, horrible. It is live. We are here on a Thursday evening, February the 5th, 2015. And we'll be on for about an hour talking about wine tonight. Thank you for joining us or listening to us on archives if you are doing so. I was listening to that opening. It just reminded me. If you have not listened to some of those wineries and some of those interviews, do so. Tune them in. They're all available. You can go back and pick up any of those. But check those out. There were some really good interviews there, some of my recognized and remembered. And so if you haven't been back and picked up some of the old episodes, good chance to do it. Pick them, you know, set down. Especially if you're in areas like, anything north of Florida. Good chance to tune them in and listen to them while you are trying to survive this cold weather snap you're having. Oh, nasty snows and everything. Climate change. It is not just heat in the summer. It is changing of the weather. So it's not global warming, but climate change. Keep that in mind. We've got some stuff to talk about tonight. Not a whole lot. There's a few things I'm going to pass on to you, some stuff. We do have our first Virginia guest next week. They'll be on with us and talking. We'll start talking about Virginia wineries, and I've got the fillers out there, so I'm sure we'll be spending some time on Virginia wineries. But right now, we don't. We're going to talk about a few things here, pass on some, I didn't know that information to you, and a few topics I'm going to cover. Probably not a full hour, but I always say that and always end up talking a full hour anyway. So, but I got my book in, Wines and Vines, great magazine, great book. I ordered the 2015 Directory and Buyer's Guide, just a big old fat, thick book that has a list of wineries in the United States and Canada and Mexico. It also has winery brands, custom crush and growers and distributors and direct shipping regulations and buyer's guide for supplies and lots and lots of stuff. Great little book. I haven't gotten one in a few years, and I figured since it's list wineries, it'd be a good opportunity to use as a cross-reference whenever we're on a stay here. So that's why I got it. But they have this one page here that I'm going to share some information. U.S. wineries by annual case production. Winery case production range. Now, this is interesting here. The number of wineries by how many cases they make. Large wineries, 500,000 cases or more. In 2014, there were 58 wineries that made 500,000 cases or more in the year. 50,000 to 499,999, 254 wineries. Small, 5,000 to 49,999, there were 1,475 wineries. Very small wineries, which they classify as 1,000 to 4,999, in 2014, there were 3,426 wineries. And limited production, that's less than 1,000 cases, which a lot of wineries are in that range too, there was 2,929. So a total of 8,142 wineries in this country in 2014, with most of them being in the very small limited production categories. That's where we've said before, and we've always said as we've talked to the different wineries around this country, that's what's being made. That is most of them right there. Very few of them are the real biggie ones that we think about, but most of them are small. I don't want to do that. Something jumped up on my screen here, which scared me. Percentage of U.S. production by size of winery. And this is interesting, too. With all this talk about the upper 1% making the monies and stuff like that, this mirrors that a little bit. The large wineries, and again, the large is 500,000 cases or more, make 84% of all the wine that is consumed in this country. 84%. And there's only 58 wineries that fall into that category. Wow. The medium wineries make 9%. And there's 254 wineries there. So between the large wineries and the medium wineries, you're looking at 93% of all production. Just a little over 300 wineries of all consumption. Or production, I'm sorry, production. Small wineries, 5%. And again, that's 3,426 wineries. And very small wineries, 2% of the production falls into that category. Now, when we start switching this over to the number of wineries by annual case production, large wineries make 1%, medium 3%, small 18%, very small 42%, and limited production wineries make 36%. This is the number of wineries by annual case production. Interesting stats there, I thought. Domestic wine sales. 2014, by the month, throughout this year, we've been just shy of $600 million in sales. That's low compared to, well, I shouldn't say low compared to previous years, because it peaks in October, November, December. We're more so than we've been in the past, but not quite through the holiday season. Winery job index. Now, this is an interesting thing. The winery job index here shows the number of jobs, and it says winejobs.com tracks winery hiring activity and portrays it as an index based on January 2007 having a value of 100. So, the Winery Job Index, and you can check this out at winejobs.com if you want to check, you know, further. 2014 is above all the others, but it's you can really tell that it is seasonal, because come July, it starts dropping, and it drops seriously low going into December, and the first of the year starts picking up a little bit. But then, of course, let's refer back to the Northeast. There's not going to be a whole lot of people doing jobs in the winery business up there in the next couple of weeks. So, and no, and that includes vineyard work and stuff like that. So it makes sense. It peaks in the summer and harvest and goes down. Direct-to-consumer shipments. 2014, it peaked in March for some reason at just a little above $200 million. And then it dropped down July and August. July was the low spot where just about, it looked like about $60, $65 million. And then it peaked again toward October and into December. So interesting little chart there, how it fell down July. But there are a lot of wineries in warmer climates, Arizona I know for a fact, and there are some areas that do not ship in the summer. June, July, August, and September, they say, you know, if you want wine shipped to you, we will wait until after it warms up a little bit, or it cools down a little bit. Then once it cools down, we will then open up our shipping again. So that's why that's probably the chart shows it that way. Then U.S. wine production by volume, and we talk about 9-liter cases. A case of 12 bottles of the 750 milliliter is 9-liter. A case of 6 bottles of the 1.5, obviously 9 liters. And this is the total produced with 353 million cases. Off-premise, 81%. On-premise, 19%. And then direct-to-consumer, 9 million. There is clubs and internet and phone. And what is this one here? Tasting room sales and tasting room carryout. So that's only 3% of the total sales, just by clubs and direct shipping and all that. The majority is just off-premise sales, grocery stores and stuff like that. And so that's just some stats, some information that I wanted to share with you. Again, that's from Wines and Vines, the new 2015 directory and buyer's guide. Some things to pass on, different bits of information here, which, okay, here, this one here is, this is from Snooth. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Snooth advertises wine cells, and they drink great wine is their motto on that. They have, you can sign up for their emails if you want. But they said, well, you should still be drinking wine in January. And it says a lot of people cut back in January. They do their wine drinking. They do their wine drinking throughout the holidays. And then when it gets up to the time for January, people are saying, okay, that's it. No more. Got to lose weight. I got to do all this stuff. And so they cut back on it. Well, this article here in Snooze says that, you know, we really shouldn't. It's a good time to start looking at the health benefits. So the earliest evidence of winemaking was found in China about 7,000 BC. That was declared by chemical analysis of uncovered tartaric acid, which is the compound of wine grapes responsible for the acidity, in 9,000-year-old shards of pottery. And so that is how they came up with the 7,000 BC, since this is 2,000, 9,000 years ago. It says that it's thought that the Chinese, instead of using grapes, used hawthorn fruit. The berries of the hawthorn tree are extremely tart, and they're also believed to be a potent heart medicine, regulating blood pressure and circulation. So, hey, good things there. The fruit's high sugar content and ability to host yeast for fermentation made it ideal for wine. It was used as some medicinal Chinese herbs over the thousands of years. And during the Ming Dynasty, a lot of medicinal references were used, wine references were used for the health benefits and stuff. And also to help the circulatory system and that. Alcohol, or ancient alcohol. I just glanced at something else and my mind got caught on alcohol. Ancient Egyptians were also familiar with the role of wine. A 2019 team led by the University of Pennsylvania's museum discovered chemical evidence of wine with medicinal herbal additives in some old ancient Egyptian pots and stuff. It says some jars from a tomb of one of the first pharaohs of Egypt, Scorpion the First, which dates to 3150 BC, showed some of that. Hieroglyphics also indicates that herbs like garlic, onion, celery, mint, coriander, aloe, hyssop, and more were used to add to wine to make it better for you. Mesopotamia ground snake skin and wine together to create a cure for gallbladder problems. The Mesopotamians also recommended pouring wine vinegar into your ears with a leaked blood or liquid. And when it came to fluid-filled lungs, the Mesopotamians suggest mixing some sweet wine with herbs such as cedar, cypress, myrtle, myrrh, and turmeric. The tonic was to be consumed through a sweet reed, which is actually a straw made from a marsh plant like a bamboo, which produces sugars, extra sugars and stuff. Wine is particularly synonymous with ancient Rome. Modern winemaking technique is well documented back to the ancient Roman times. We're still using a lot of it. Cato the Elder actually wrote a lot of stuff and made some of the earliest books on wine and viticulture and all that good stuff. He underscored the health benefits of wine a lot in his books. And he also championed the moderate drinking of wine instead of, you know, to excess, as the Romans are noted. He said that it's best to keep it at a medium level. He claimed that the flowers of juniper, myrtle, hellebore, whatever that is, and pomegranate soaked in wine were useful against snake bites, constipation, gout, indigestion, and other illnesses. So, just a lot of different things that has been found over the years that the health benefits of wine. Then they have a couple of recipes here, which I am not going to read you because it's old recipes from 1861 and stuff like that. And it's just basically, well, you know, one bottle of claret wine, one pint bottle of German seltzer water, a small bunch of balm, also a barrage, one orange cut in slices, half a cucumber sliced thick, a liquor glass of cognac, and 1 ounce bruised sugar candy. Place all these ingredients in the covered jug, well immersed in rough ice. Stir all ingredients together with a silver spoon. And when the cup has been iced for about an hour, strain or decanter it off free from the herbs. And then drink it. So, there you go. Interesting. Interesting drink there. I don't think so. Thank you anyway. But the health benefits of wine, we've all heard about it, and that's another yet there. All right, a few things I want to pass on to you here other than that. growlers. I don't know if y'all know growlers. Growlers are like a half a gallon, basically a half gallon size. Florida just recently passed the use of growlers in beer. In Florida, you can get a gallon jug, but you can get a half gallon. I mean, you can get quarts and stuff like that, but the half gallon is a rather new one. So it's something new. But growlers in, well, let's see, I'm lost. Okay, growlers are starting to be used for wine now. It shows something new and innovative. And I caught this because it is about Virginia. Virginia's introducing growlers as a way. Is Michael Schaps, who's a winemaker in Albemarle County, has distributed his products in bottles and boxes and plans to bring back the jugs into the taste room. Beer in the 64-ounce jugs is popular. That's the size of the growlers. And he's planning on using the jugs to transport wine in the 64-ounce. So he'll use growlers for wine. He said they're really going to go old school, getting it right out of the barrel, calling it Mon Bidon, which is French for my canteen. The reusable glass containers are poured fresh in the breweries, but the growlers can be washed down and brought back for refills. And the growlers, he says, for wine has advantages and disadvantages. Wine cannot be aged in a growler because the jugs do not seal tight as do bottles or boxes. He says great for weekend picnics or if you're having a party or something like that. Virginia wine officials say they can't confirm that Schaps is the only winemaker offering the growler. The containers are more common in California and Oregon, as well as all over France, which I'm sure France wouldn't have a 64-ounce since they're metric over there. They've been looking at this for about 6 months and figuring it will work, so they're going to start doing the growlers. The Secretary of Agriculture and Forestry of Virginia, Todd Haymore, said the growler concept is an example of the state wine industry's ability to innovate, which good for him. He's not saying, we're not going to do this, which you hear so often from state legislatures. He's saying, hey, you know, this is a good way to do it. He goes on to say, I don't think we would have thought that we'd be seeing growlers in the wine industry in Virginia, but it's not surprising our winemakers are finding new ways to attract customers and want them to have products that they are make products that they want. Hayward said the state's wine industry had a banner year in fiscal 2014 with an estimated 521,000 cases of wine sold, which beat the previous record of 511,000 sold in 2013. It says that they're spreading the wines in other states and other parts of the world, London as well as China. He said that the growlers is a good way to offer people the wine that they can take with them, go home and enjoy and bring back and get a refill. The growlers are being used in the restaurants and other locations, and it's a good way to get the wine out there without having the cost of the bottles and everything that's associated with that. So there you go. Growlers in Virginia is starting to become big for wine. They just approved it here in Florida. Growlers in Florida were just approved because, well, it's been debated a long time, and they just approved it for beer. So it is something that's starting to pick up, looks like, around the world. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago about the French Laundry, the restaurant in California, actually in, Lodi? Yountville. Yountville restaurant, where it had a break-in. And $300,000 worth of world-class wine was stolen from the restaurant last month. What's been found? It's been found in a private cellar in North Carolina. But they don't know who took it, though. That's still something that they're trying to figure out. But the wine itself has been found. It was stolen Christmas Day from the French Laundry, a total of 76 bottles, mainly rare French wine. And for some reason, end up in Greensboro, North Carolina. All but a couple of bottles have been recovered. I guess if you're going to steal it, you really should try a couple. The break in the case came because of the widespread publicity of the heist and with the help of a sophisticated tracking technology. Remember, we talked in the past, too, about putting chips in the labels and underneath the foils and stuff like that because of the not so much of theft, but because of the problems with counterfeiting or with, not counterfeiting so much as just selling cheap wine knockoffs for real wines. And so they were doing that, and maybe they did it with this. I don't know. It didn't say anywhere exactly that they did do that. It just says technology. The stolen wine included bottles of some of the most prestigious producers in the world, and where the winery owners use, they do say laser and digital technology on the corks. And so it did come out on that. A single bottle from the French estate can retail for as much as $10,000. The theft was noted throughout the world, and they got anonymous tips tipping off where the wine was. The thieves pried open two locked doors, an outer restaurant door and a wine cellar door, and took the most expensive bottles. So basically they knew what they were looking for, and they walked away with just that. They tunneled underneath the restaurant. They have Napa Sheriff Detectives will be working with both state and federal enforcement as they continue to investigate the case. And is considered, the French Laundry theft is considered among the world's all-time leading wine burglaries. So, hey, there you go. But they caught them. They recovered. I shouldn't say they caught them. They've recovered the models for that. So, good for them. I was told you I'd follow up on that if I saw anything. There you go. Let's see. Okay, here we go. This is interesting here. We've talked about this off and on, but here it is. This is from the Daily News New York. It states the headline, U.S. is top wine-consuming country by volume. Italy leads per capita. 13th Annual International Wine and Spirits Research Report found that Americans drink almost 340 million 9-liter cases of wine in 2014, whereas the Italians drink the most wine per person, though that rate is expected to drop. The new figures are released on global wine consumption habits, and the U.S. is number one in total volume. Italians per person. The 13th annual report commissioned by the wine trade and analysts says that the Americans emptied 339.6 million cases of 9-liter cases of wine in 2014. The Italians drank the most wine per person, tipping back an average of 40.1 liters in 2014. 48.1 liters per person. That is a bottle of, that is actually over a bottle. It's a quarter more of what we're, that's a lot of wine per person. They expect that to drop by 2018, though. There are some interesting notes. Top 10 wine-consuming countries by volume in 2014. United States, number one. France, number two. Italy, number three. But it says, note, nationwide consumption is predicted to drop by 5% in Italy by 2018. Germany is posted to take over Italy as the third biggest wine-consuming nation in 3 years. And it doesn't say why. I don't know. The Germans consuming less? It doesn't say. I don't have an answer to that. But Italians consuming less. Germany is number 4. China, Hong Kong, number 5. I expect to see them move up. You know, really, there's a lot of wine being consumed over there. United Kingdom, 6. Argentina, 7. Russia, 8. Spain, 9. And Australia is number 10. But then when we start looking at the top 10 biggest consumers of wine per capita, we go Italy, number 1. And again, that's expected to drop by 6% by 2018, which will drop them into second place, which right now is France. Switzerland is 3rd. Portugal, 4. Austria, 5. Greece, 6. Denmark, 7. Germany, 8. Argentina, 9. And Hungary is number 10 on per capita. The biggest wine consumers in 2014 of sparkling wine. Now, this could be champagne or Prosecco or any of those, Number 1, surprisingly, Germany. France, number 2. Russia, number 3. United States, number 4. United Kingdom, 5. Italy, 6. Spain, 7. Ukraine is 8. Australia, 9. And Belgium and Luxembourg, 10. And then we've got the top 10 importing countries in 2014. Importing, to bring it into the country. Germany, number 1. United Kingdom, 2. USA, number 3. China, Hong Kong, 4. Netherlands, 5. Canada, 6. Russia, 7. Japan, 8. Belgium, Luxembourg, 9. And Sweden, number 10. And then here we go. I'll read you this here, which is, this isn't wine. But this is the most popular spirits in the world in 2014. And I don't know what this first name is. Baijiu. Bayou? Bayou? Or Baijiu? I don't know. See, that's what's always nice when Mike is here, because I say that and he's looking it up and getting it on top of him and letting us know. But I don't know. But that's number 1. Baijiu. Number 1, spirit in the world. Number 2, vodka. 3, brandy. 4, rum. 5, scotch. 6, liqueurs, which I'm sure covers a big bunch of different ones. Bourbon, 7. Gin, 8. Tequila, 9. And cognac or armagnac is 10. So there you go. There's your top 10 spirits in 2014. I'm going to have to look up that. Let me get it, make a pen and write this down. Where'd my pen go? It was just right on there. I'm going to write that down so I can look that up myself, and I'm curious. What happened to you? Oh, let's back up. There we go. Okay. Baijiu. So if one of you just happened to look that up while we're still in the program, then pop in there and let me know. So, let's see. Oh, here we go. Wine for Pregnant Women launched a new line called Wine for Pregnant Women. And it is a U.S. entrepreneur has created a range of sparkling wine aimed at encouraging pregnant women to pop the cork. Founded in North Carolina, former recruitment consultant Carrie Marvin has came out with a brand called the 9 Months brand, and it's based on her not-so-crazy idea that pregnant women like feeling like part of the celebration, too. It's a non-alcoholic sparkling drink, and is made from grapes grown in South Australia, and the juice is kept at 0 degrees centigrade to prevent fermentation before filtered, pasteurized, and carbonated. The current range features a red blend and a white made from Muscat. Both kind of retail price is $16.50. And packaged to look like other sparkling wine products. It's the appeal by pregnant women of website states is 9 months sparkling blend is for mothers to be who can pop the cork while they are waiting to pop. No, that's cute. We've never been ones to miss out on the fun, so we set out to develop a beverage for expecting moms so they too can raise a glass and partake in toast whenever the occasion. The brand thinks the latest addition is to a growing market for non-alcoholic wines will fit well. A non-alcoholic wine sales in the U.S. rose by 5.6% in the 12 months ending November to just under $100 million in the United States. Non-alcoholic wine. Don't they call that grape juice? People come into the winery all the time and they say, "Do you have non-alcoholic wine?" I say, "Grape juice down at the grocery store." I don't know. A percentage of sales from the 9 months is going to a baby's health charity, March of Dimes. Yay for them. The company said, just because you'll soon be preparing bottles of a different variety doesn't mean that you can't enjoy a bottle of our delicious non-alcoholic bubbly. You've earned it. So, you know, be preparing baby bottles, but enjoy our bottle. Good for them. I mean, maybe it's something that needs to be done. So, $16.50 for a bottle of a sparkling grape juice, coming from Southern Australia. That's from the drinks business, February issue of the drinks business. So brand new, obviously brand new. Here, the next one I have for you here, bit of information, is just a quick one. Israel. We've talked about Israeli wines before. We've mentioned it a few times here and there and talked about it. And during the Passover and stuff like that, we've mentioned the Israeli wines. Well, if I can find it here, and I know it's here. There we go. Israeli wine exports have grown. In 2014, Israeli wine exports rose by 10%, which reached total sales of $220 million last year, which is $40 million was in exports. We talked about the fact that you can't find too much in past episodes. You can't find very many Israeli wines in this country. It's just like not something that you normally see. But this says that this is being shipped all over now. The Israeli Export and International Cooperation Institutes attributes the rise of wine exports to growing demand in North America, Europe, and Asia. 58% of wine exports amounting to $23 million went to North America, with $20 million of it to the United States. So, wow, there's a lot of Israeli wines in this country. I'm going to have to start checking out and see if I can't find some more of them. Israel has 250 wineries, which 50 of them operate commercially. Overall, the annual sales of Israeli-made wines reached $220 million in 2014. So, wow, there are Israeli wines out there. I wonder how many is kosher. I mean, you would almost think the programs we've done in the past, we've talked about how many of the Israeli wines are kosher. So it might be, and we've also covered that on there. The official wine for the Super Bowl, since we just had it last Sunday night. And, oh, by the way, I hope the team that you were cheering for won. My daughter won some money off of it, although she wasn't thrilled with the team that won, but she was thrilled that she won money off of it. I enjoyed the game. It was a good game. So that's what counts. Sonoma County to be the official 2016 Super Bowl wine. So, Super Bowl 50 is, going to be celebrated as Sonoma County being the official Super Bowl wine. I didn't even know they had an official wine. I don't know if there is some way we can look up the official Super Bowl wine for each year and find out whose it is and where it came from and all that. The official Super Bowl wine. Part of that might be that the Super Bowl is going to be held in San Francisco next year, or that area, I believe it is. About 1 million visitors are expected at the Fan Village, which is held right before it. Sonoma County Wine, the official sponsor Super Bowl in the Bay Area. So that could be the reason, but here we go. Super Bowl 50 is the official wine for Super Bowl 50 is the Sonoma County Vineyards, or Vinters, not Vineyards, but Vinters. So look forward to that. Look for that out there. Okay, moving on here to the next thing I want to talk to you about is the number of wineries increased. North American wineries have grown this past year. I just got to reading you that information of how many wineries there are. But number of North American wineries grew by 7% this past year. Bonded and virtual wineries, type of winery, U.S. bonded wineries in the United States at the end of 2014, 6,812. Number of virtual wineries, 1,475 for a total in the U.S. of 8,287. Virtual wineries are satellites and stuff like that, the ones that are actual satellites off of a different license, are the same license and stuff. We've talked to a lot of people who have virtual wineries and connections. Canada has 703 wineries total in North America of 8,990 wineries, a 23% increase in 2014 of virtual wineries, and bonded wineries grew by 4%. States with 100-plus wineries, and this is an interesting little list here. I'll run through this quickly. Here, but states with 100-plus wineries. California, obviously number one, with 3,913. Washington, number two, was 704. Oregon, next, was 632. New York, 333. British Columbia is on the list with 278. Virginia, 257. Wow, last time I looked, it was 253. They increased by four. Ontario, 224. Texas, 215. Pennsylvania, 200. Ohio, 158. Michigan, 143. North Carolina, 138. Missouri, 132. That amazes me that Missouri has that many. Colorado, 113. And Illinois, 104. Wow, there's a chunk of wineries around this country. And just some interesting facts there for you. So we have increased. We have jumped up. We are growing. Wineries are one of the fastest. That and microbreweries are the biggest growing segments in this country. For a lot of things. So Dakota has now got a bill to allow direct shipping to people. South Dakota may soon be able to buy wine from small wineries outside the state and have it shipped to their home. Lawmakers have passed a bill which allows direct shipment of wine into the state. Yay for them. So the measure is also set up on track online tracking system to the Department of Revenue to oversee the wine sales. Though the online system, both out-of-state and local wineries are able to register and pay their taxes online. Proponents say that the cost to set up this online system is around $100,000, but they said that they will make it back, and it will pass. The bill will pass the House Taxation Committee. Had no opposition, and it's going to be moved to the floor. House Bill 1001 is what it is. So, yay for you up there in South Dakota. Glad to hear that that's happening, and you're going to be able to be order wines from different states and all that. That tax thing is the big thing that everybody's always worried about. Maybe if they get themselves a system, maybe if they get themselves something set up that will work, then, you know, other states follow suit. You know, see what you can do and see what you can come up with. But that's a good idea to have something like that. Let's see. I had something here. What is it? World wine shipments rose. Wine consumption. I just read that. Wine shipments rose in 2014, which we pretty much expect because more and more states are allowing it. So that's a good thing there. So something to be happy about. Oh, let's see. This next one here is this one little thing. California. They're saying that California grapevines are disappearing. They are, well, this is from the Sacramento Bee, the Sacramento newspaper. It says California grapevines disappear because the market is being flooded by low-priced grapes and wines. The industry of stagnant sales of low-priced wine and a glut of overseas competitors in the Central Valley of California are ripping out their vines and replacing them with more profitable crops such as almonds. It said that the latest meeting of the farmers, vintners, and other wine professionals gathered for the event. Lower price wine declined in 2014, while the bottles priced at $10 and above enjoyed growth. But it's too big of a gap, they're saying. It's just, according to a survey, the consulting firm of, you know, this person, that person, that person says wine shipments to the U.S. from all sources, including foreign countries, rose by 375 million cases in 2014, a 1% increase over the previous year. And this is impacting wines in the United States. Table wines priced up to $7, a segment that's considered the core of the domestic wine market, saw sales slip by 1.2 million cases, while wines in $7 and more rose by 1.7 million cases. So it's still not profitable. They're ripping out the grapevines and putting in other stuff. The bulldozers have been busy, say a lot of them, and it's something that could affect prices down the line. Central Valley, though, is pretty warm. The type of grapes are grown there, which includes a lot of raisin grapes. I wonder if that's being affected too. So it doesn't say. It doesn't say in this article, but that's just interesting article there about how they are ripping up that. Okay, let's see. French Laundry bottles are back home. They're back up at the French Laundry, all of them except two. And so those are settled back in. This next article, climate change. I mentioned climate change a little bit ago. It's already affecting how they're growing grapes in Cuyahoga County wineries up in New York, upper part of New York, around the Finger Lakes. It says that the grape growing region on the Finger Lakes has become a game of extremes. It's no longer averages. You can't see we have average days here and average days there. Second wettest June in Finger Lakes record was in 2013. 80-degree March temperatures in 2012. Polar vortex and hottest year on record in 2014. There is no such thing as averages. The global warming and the global climate change, better worded, is really playing havoc on it. We talked to some of the wineries in that area, and they also mentioned that to us, that it is really not easy to pick a average anymore because of the fluctuations and all the different things that have happened. Hot and cold in concert can cause problems. Premature summer temperatures causes early bud breaks, and that leaves the leaves and the grapes vulnerable to the frost that are coming in April and May, and it's stunting some of the Concord grapes in the Lake Erie region. And it's just the overall, the average bloom on some of the grapes is coming as much as 7 days earlier than it did 40 years ago. The whole thing is changing up there. The climate change is starting to affect it, and they're starting to notice it. We've talked about climate change in the past, about how climate change is affecting different areas around the world and how it's making it. They're saying that Napa no longer will be Napa Valley as we know it, but Willamette Valley in Oregon will be the new Napa in the next 25 years or so. I don't know. It's something that you can't change it overnight. I mean, it didn't happen overnight, and it can't be cured overnight. But it's something that's starting to affect the grape growing regions, and it's going to make a difference, I think, in closer future than the far future. But the already the New York area is being affected, and being affected in big ways because of that. And then, let's see, where are we? I've got one more thing to do, tell you about here, and then we're going to call it an evening. Let's see, what is this? Spain. Oh, here we go. Spain dominates the bio wine industry, as in organic and, biodynamic. Yeah, thank you. My engineer just told me in the back there. Biodynamic. Spain is the leading one in the world. Surprisingly, global production of organic wine is dominated by the world's three largest wine producing nations. Spain being number one with 84,000 acres. Italy, number two, 68,000 acres. And France, number three at 64,000 acres, hectares, which is different than acres. That's in 2013. They have showed an impressive growth in converting it. Since 2008, Spain has increased by 172%, Italy by 68%, and France by 129%. They're saying that organic can no longer be considered a niche, or however we should pronounce it. It's a category that has moved forward and is gaining traction due to positive market signals, which are encouraging conversion. Spain produces 27% of the world's organic wine. The country's wine drinkers only consume 1% of that, so it's shipped away. Organic wines are primarily bound for export, but the opposite is true in France. The French produce 22% of the world's organic wine. The country's drinkers consume about 21% of the world's organic wine. 6% of the organic wines grown in France are consumed in that country. The competition the 2015 Premier International Organic Wine Competition indicated that Spain, Italy, and France dominated in terms of quality. 39 gold medals were given in the red wine category. 37 granted to France, and Portuguese also came in with some organic wines. Of the 37 medals won by Spain, Italy, and France, 23 of those medals went to France's wines. So Spain took home 10 gold for the reds, while Italy took home 10 golds also. So organic wines, if you're into organics, those are the places you need. Those are the wines you need to start looking for. France, Italy, and Germany are, I'm sorry, Spain. France, Italy, and Spain are organic wine producers now. So there we go. I am wanting to pass on that stuff to you next week. We do have a guest coming back with us. We have a guest from Virginia. Yay. We would look forward to talking to Virginia Wineries, and we do have a guest next week. I am having a heck of a time finding people right away, but I will continue to work more and more on that and see what I can come up with for us. And, wait a minute. In 2 weeks, we might be able to get Irene King on. I don't know if you remember Irene King. She was on with us a year and a half ago. She has got herself a tremendous amount of certifications and all sorts of stuff. And she's supposed to have finished her last one. So she just emailed me actually during the program here and said that in a couple of weeks she might be able to get on with this here. So I'll have to email her and see if we can't schedule her. But Virginia's coming up next week. It's the state of Virginia. We have a winery there, and I know I'm not telling you which one because I'll post it. You can check it out there because I don't have it in front of me right now. It's bad me. So have yourself a wonderful week and keep safe. And for those of you all up in the north, keep warm. And we'll look forward to seeing all of you back here next week. Check us out on archives. If you haven't listened to some of the older ones, I repeat, check those out. Those are really fantastic. And, stay warm and stay comfortable and drink wine. And we'll see you next week. Good night.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.